Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's that time, folks. That time for you to sit parlor out. Sit parlor network. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Shemaine Man, Marvin Rome, coming to you live again for another riveting but educational and enlightening show. This is the Empowerment 365 show that you don't want to miss. We're talking about black politics. We're talking about black economics. We're talking about you. Let's get started. Better love. And as always, there is no better love than the love for self and kind. No better love. Love yourself, people. Welcome again to another episode of Empowerment 365 and our Empowerment Saturday show. Let's get started, of course, as always, with the NAAEA. And that is, of course, the National African American Empowerment Association. And that association focuses in five critical areas: politics, economics, athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition, culture, and education. And that is what we're all about. Why, you ask? Because we need a political agenda as African Americans. We need an economic agenda as African Americans. We need an athletic health, wellness, and fitness model as African Americans. That's what we need, because we need to take care of not only our minds, but we need to take care of our bodies. We need relevant cultural programs, and a relevant cultural program and an educational model that helps our people to enrich themselves, to develop themselves, right? So the cultural piece is so, so important to how we will move forward. Today's show is returning to our rightful place, but we're going to talk about the reasons why we're in the position that we're in now, and then piggyback off of that into figuring out whether the question I'm going to ask later is relevant or not. All right, so right now we're going to go down to Brother George. Brother George, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Welcome, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good today, brother. How are you?
I'm doing well. Technical difficulties, but we work through them. We're here, and we're
okay.
Live. So we got the Willie Lynch moment, and we have our Kwanzaa segment today. You got it? You got it ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. It's on you, brother. Take it away.
All right. Well, I'm going to start out first with the Willie Lynch segment, and today I'm going to be reading from a book called The Story of the Moors in Spain by Stanley Lane Poole. I'm going to say a little bit about Lane Poole, and then I'm going to make a statement that is very relevant to the Willie Lynch program. During the years 1895 to 1897, Lane Poole worked as an archaeologist for the Egyptian government. From 1898 until his retirement in 1909, he was a professor of Arabic at Trinity College, Dublin, Ireland. After retiring in 1904, Lane Poole lived in London until his death on December 29, 1931. Of all his historical works, The Moors in Spain is preeminent, and it is a privilege for the present reader to study this great historic classic. So the things that I'm talking about, this is a historical classic about the Moors in Spain. Eurocentric historians argue that Europe gave civilization to Africa, which is a complete inversion of the truth. The first civilized Europeans were the Greeks, who were chiefly civilized by the Africans of the Nile Valley. The Greeks transmitted this culture to the Romans, who finally lost it, bringing on a dark age of 500 years. Civilization was restored to Europe when another group of Africans, the Moors, brought the dark age to an end. Meanwhile, re-civilizing the Christian barbarians of Europe. Now, I say that once again because basically we're taught the reverse. And another thing that I'm going to say is he made it very plain that the Moors were Africans, not Arabs, and they knew the difference. And what I'm saying to you is that that's another part of that Willie Lynch. Never teach them anything that is relevant to their historical past, because the human mind has a way of readjusting itself back to who we once were. And that's exactly what's happened to us today. Now I'm going to move into the Kwanzaa segment. Once again, what is Kwanzaa? Well, every year they have a lot of questions at the Kwanzaa Outreach Program. And the question is, you know, basically where did Kwanzaa come from? Well, Kwanzaa is an African-American celebration that was put together. It's not a replacement for Christmas, and Kwanzaa runs from December 26th, which is next Saturday, until December the 1st. Dr. Malana Karinga was the creator of the festival called Kwanzaa. And he created it because after the Watts riots, which was, you know, really detrimental to the black community, he wanted to do something. And that wasn't the only riot that was going on in this country. He wanted to do something to bring the black American back into a sense of unity with ourselves, really strong, and give us some strong principles to work with at that time. And so in 1966, he put together, a lot of it is based on African traditions and celebrations. It's not from Africa. It is based on African traditions and different things. So he put the holiday together to bring us together. Now, the way that the holiday is structured, you have seven symbols of Kwanzaa, and you have seven principles of Kwanzaa. Now, when Kwanzaa starts, your greeting with Kwanzaa is Habari Gani. And Habari Gani means, how are you? Or how was the news within your space? Now, the seven symbols, starting with number one, is the mosaic, which means the crops. Mosaic symbolizes the fruits of collective planning and work. And the word mosaic is spelled M-A-Z-A-O. The second principle is the mkeka. The second symbol is the mkeka, which is the placemat. And just as the crops stand on the mkeka, the present day stands on the past. And that's what it symbolizes. And mkeka is spelled M-K-E-K-A. Now, the third symbol of Kwanzaa is Mahunde, which is the ear of corn. The stalk of corn represents fertility and the idea that through children, the future hopes of the family are brought to life. And that's symbolized by the ear of corn. And Mahunde is spelled M-U-H-I-N-D-I. The fourth is the Mishuma Saba, the seven candles. Candles are ceremonial objects that serve to symbolically recreate the sun's power, as well as to provide light. Now, the candles are 3 candles are red, 3 candles are green, and 1 candle is black. The red stands for the blood of our people, the green stands for the land, and the black stands for us as people in general. So y'all know where the red, black, and green came from, Marcus Garvey. The fifth symbol of Kwanzaa is Kanara, the Kanara. The Kanara is the candle holder. The Kanara represents our ancestry and the original star from which we came. The sixth symbol of Kwanzaa is the Kinkumbi, Sha, Umoja, which is the unity cup. And on the sixth day of Kwanzaa, the liberation ritual is performed to honor the ancestors. Every family member and guest will take a drink together as a sign of unity and remembrance. And each one will also name a ancestor that they want to celebrate on that particular day of celebration. And that's the sixth day of Kwanzaa. The Zawadi, you spell K-I-K-O-M-B-E and then C-H-A and then Umoja. And Zawadi means the gifts. And on the seventh day of Kwanzaa, gifts are given to encourage growth, achievement, and success. Handmade gifts are encouraged to promote self-determination, purpose, and creativity. But if you must give a gift that's not handmade, then it's also okay. And Zawadi is spelled Z-A-W-A-D-I. Now we go into the seven principles. And once again, the greeting, when you initially talk to someone on Kwanzaa, the first thing you would say is Habargani, and then they would return the principle of that day, which the first day would be Umoja. And so if you called me, I would say Habargani, and then you would say Umoja. Now, Umoja means unity and to strive for, maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. The second day of Kwanzaa is called Kuji Chagalia, and that stands for self-determination, to define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. The third day of Kwanzaa is called Ujima, collective work and responsibility, to build and maintain our community together and make our brothers and sisters' problems our problems and solve them together. The fourth day of Kwanzaa is called Ujamaa, and that's cooperative economics, to build and maintain our own stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. The fifth day of Kwanzaa is called Nia, which is purpose, to make our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. The sixth day of Kwanzaa is called Kuumba, and it's creativity, to always do as much as we can in the way we can in order to leave our community more beautiful and beneficial than when we inherited. The seventh day of Kwanzaa and final day is Imani, and Imani means faith, to believe with all our heart in our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle. And brothers and sisters, that's a brief introduction to Kwanzaa.
Thank you, Brother George. Y'all are probably wondering. Well, first of all, before I even get to that, brother, thank you very much for breaking that down. And we're going to continue to dive into the principles of Kwanzaa because I think they're beneficial to our culture and our community. So thank you, Brother George, for that. Why Kwanzaa, you're asking? All right, we need a foundation. I think Kwanzaa gives us a bearing, right? Culture gives you the lines in the road, so to speak, that you don't get out of bounds. And we need these tools. So we'll transition now. I'm going to bring my brother in, Brother Stan Macklin. Are you with us?
Hey, I'm with you, my brother. Glad to be here on another wonderful episode of Empowerment 360 and 365. And we're just so glad to be a part of the National African American Empowerment Association.
All right. I appreciate that. The deck is full, brother. I'm going to play this clip, and then we're going to get into the juicy part of the show. We're coming to you live, callers, in just a minute. Here we go.
Why is it that we have placed white people as the center of our universe where everything has to happen and revolve around them? Because I'm going to tell you something. That what that song is, a thin line between love and hate.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, hating the white man and loving the white man is really like, you know, what's the common thing in both of those things? The white man. Whether you hating him or loving him, you're still placing him at the center of your universe. Here's a radical thought. How about we place ourselves at the center of our universe? Black people in America have Stockholm Syndrome. It's a combination of the Stockholm Syndrome when it comes to like the Black Power Americans and the militant integrationists. That's the people who on the surface want to be pro-Black but don't want to leave America. That's basically what I call them, Black Power Americans and militant integrationists. They want to fight for their rights and the fight to be equal here in America, or either they want to exist fighting the white man inside of America forever. It's like the Batman versus the Joker. You know, that's the relationship they want to maintain here in America. And me personally, I don't want my children to be engaged in a Batman versus the Joker relationship with white people. I would like my children to actually grow up in an environment where they probably never even deal with white people. They've only seen their people in power. We feel that if you are the type of person that wants real Black power, because everybody keeps screaming Black power, but not many people really want Black power. Like, you can't scream Black power and still be behind the American flag. If you want Black power, then that means you want your own nation. There's no way around it. If you don't want your own nation, then basically what you want to be is equal with white people in America. Good luck with that. There's no other organization I can think of that is rallying around Black people in America and in the diaspora having a nation of their own. Because currently, Black folks in America and Africans in the diaspora are living as second and third class citizens in foreign lands. We've been ripped from the motherland, and we've been basically brought over and used as slave labor to build up other people's countries, and we've never had the ability to control our own piece of territory and control policy on that territory. So that within itself makes us radically different than any organization, because most so-called Black organizations are trying to struggle for civil rights and struggle for equality with white people here in America. Most Black talking heads, most mainstream Black pundits, they are not about nationhood. And if you're sitting there saying, gee, I wonder if he's talking about so, yeah, I'm talking about all of them. They're not for nationhood. They're for talking Black and they're vague and they're abstract. It is my position that the reason why we're in the position that we're in right now, it can't just be the white man. The white man is not Thanos. The white man don't have the infinity gauntlet with all the stones and snapping his fingers, making people disappear. The white man is not all powerful as people make him out to be. The only way we are in this position that we are in right now is Black involvement. That means that there's a certain portion of our people that get paid a handsome fee for us being where we are. And that's as real as it gets. Say at the end game of the BAIO, we have every Black person in each state has joined the BAIO in a perfect world, right?
Yes.
Every black person in the America has joined the BAIO. Not every black person, but black people that want a nation of their own in each state has joined the BAIO. And let's say the BAIO has, I say, 2 million members.
Okay.
2 million members with skilled laborers, meaning we have people that specialize in all types of professions. We have doctors. We have engineers. We have technicians. We have dentists. We have all of this. Every aspect of nationhood that you possibly can have, we possess as the BAIO.
Okay. Brother,
now we can negotiate with anybody. Any African country we can negotiate with. Because now we actually have a we. Now we actually have a us. Now we actually have an our. And we're bringing something to the table. It's not some abstract idea that African Americans and African diasporans are going to work with Africans on the continent. It is happening right now. It's happening in Kenya right now. It's happening in Angola right now. It's happening in Ghana right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening in South Africa right now. It's happening all over the continent right now. So when people say Africans can't work with Africans in America, you are pulling that shit out of your ass. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're speaking out of complete and utter ignorance because it's already happening. The question that I have for those people is this. Do you believe that black people should have a nation of their own? Yes or no? And I want...
There it is. That's the question. Do you feel that we should have a nation of our own? And then number two, are we ready for a nation of our own? Being that the brother just mentioned that many of us are suffering from Stockholm Syndrome, right? And if you don't know what that is, that means that you're really identifying with your abductor, so to speak, and that you are thinking in that mindset. And so, Stan, I'm asking you first. Are we ready? Are we ready?
No, man.
What do we bring to the table?
No, it's not going to happen because we have been so marginalized and polarized and alienated to the extent that as the brother who always on the show talks about the nigger syndrome. When it comes to something like that, we're still niggers. We don't know how to separate ourselves to formulate an empire, which is our original position. And so
right.
we're too polluted. We're too polluted here. Now, it's not that it's not happening, and the brother alluded to that. There are 54 African economies in the continent of Africa that are doing it. You take an airplane there, and I've been on many of them. You know, you got black pilots, black personnel that's running the whole airport and everything. And so, you know, and you get in, then you get further into the infrastructure. You see banks, and it's just the infrastructure. But here, white supremacy has accomplished its goal. Now, I will say this here. What happened during this past election might spark a new revolution in terms of a start back toward the realization that democracy is real and it can work.
Mm-hmm.
Because if President Trump was successful with that coup, brother, it would be a sad, sad day for a lot of us black and brown people in America today, because them great again people, they're strong, 74 million of them, and that's the way they want this country to be. White is right. If you're light, you may be all right. If you're brown, you can stick around. But if you're black, get back. That's just reality, bro.
Well, so, they ain't getting back.
Yeah. So excuse me, a little cough here. But if we're going to have institutions that define our own reality, we can do that. But that's right. It's going to define your reality, because that nation building aspect, unless we focus on the village concept within our own families, it's just so many distractions. See, that's the thing about the third world countries. They don't have all the distractions and attractions that we have here in America. In America, we live, as you know, in the age of assimilation, information.
Mm-hmm.
We say the information age, but it's the age of assimilation, because how do you assimilate all the information that you get? And that's our problem. We got too much, and I hate to say it like this here. I really do, but it's the way I feel. We got too much damn distractions and attractions that takes us away from the real purpose. That's the problem. And I don't normally talk like that, but that's the reason why we can't get nothing accomplished in terms of nation building, which I adhere to and I agree, because that is our regional position. We were established on this planet as emperors and kings and queens. Come on. Queen Sheba was real. She was no mythological figment of our imagination. She was an actual queen. Come on. So we got to get back. But here in this country here, well, I don't know. Maybe let's give out a shout to the group of family members that brought some 90 acres. I think it was in Georgia. And they were trying to build a nation. Let's don't try to down them. Let's give them their props.
Give it to them.
It's just so much opposition. Because this man was created for whitey.
All right. All right, brother. You ready to go to the line?
Yeah, let's go.
Here we go. All right, so here's the question, caller. I know y'all waiting. All right, are we ready to control policy? What are we bringing to the table? Do we have the skills and tools and the aptitude to lead our own nation, to lead from the front? I'm starting at the top of the deck, shuffling it up, and it's 9282. If you ready to talk, we ready to listen. It's the Empowerment Network, Marvin Ronan, Stan Macklin. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Hope all is well.
Assalamu alaikum, my brother.
Yes, sir. Answer your question first, because I know we don't have a lot of time. Are we capable? Are we intellectually capable? Can we do the things you say? Are we ready to do? Of course we are capable. But do we know that we are capable? Are we ready to do the things that we are capable to do? Do we understand the greatness that's in us? No. We do not. We have truly been enslaved in this country, and we accept it hook, line, and sinker. So no, we're not ready, but we are extremely capable of doing it. We just don't know that we are. You know, it's like our children when they're born. Are they capable of ruling the world when they come out of the womb? Yes, they are. But by the time they get to the age of being able to do it, have we prepared them and nurtured them to where they know the greatness that's in them? No, they are not. Mm-hmm. We have not. That's what we need to work on. Two quick statements, then a question. Research Christmas. We're not going to talk about that today, but I'm asking you all, research Christmas. Research what the white man say about Christmas. I'll leave it at that. Okay?
All right.
Next thing is, we must understand communications. That's the most powerful tool in the world, communication. Who controls communications control the mind, control the airways. The internet was created for the military. And I've said this before. We must understand this. The internet was created for the military. Therefore, it's a weapon. Okay. Now, once we get it to where we can commercialize it and make money out of it, Then we start selling it. We come up with Facebook. We come up with Twitter. We come up with all those things. But it's still a weapon serving the purpose of the military. We must understand that. Now,
all right.
My final thing is this is a simple question.
It's
we
a question.
Are supposed to be God-fearing people. Okay, we're raised that way. We're Christians, what have you, as a nation. You know, God-fearing nation, we all doing the things we want to do, especially towards the end of our lives, to get into heaven. If we believe in life after death, we think we're going someplace else, okay, which we call heaven, or if you don't do the right thing, you're going to hell. All right, now, having said that, simple question, and the answer will change our lives. Either answer is going to change our lives. When we talk about COVID-19,
Is this the question?
When we're talking about COVID-19,
okay.
The question is, did God create COVID-19 or did man create COVID-19? Now, if the answer is God created COVID-19, then we must, as a people, say, what in the hell are we doing wrong? Why would God create such a plague to come kill all the people that he can on the planet, particularly black and brown people, because that's who is killing? What have we done? So then that will dictate, if we look at that logically, that we need to change our actions, because obviously we done pissed God off. Okay?
All right, I got to stop you right there, brother. I got to stop you right there. I got a whole lot on the deck, but I appreciate that. We're going to contemplate the thought, and we're going to give it some more merit to that. Thank you, brother, for right now. I'll get back to you if I can.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hold tight, though. All right. 4692, you're up next on deck. It's the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin, it's your turn to talk.
Good afternoon, my brothers and my sisters. Let me say this in answering the question that is proposed. I agree with the previous caller. We are capable. Readiness is a state of mind that causes me to ask the other question. Where are we going to establish this nation? I, for one, am of the mindset that a nation is unto itself. It's only our mindset that keeps us limited to these United States. So I like the idea of the brothers and sisters that are buying large land masses across this country. But I want to say it was maybe ASAP Rocky who went over in Senegal or somewhere. And so this idea of having a place where we establish the system that allow us to have control over our own destiny, we have to first get to where, I think the previous brother said, you know, we have to get in our mind to know that we have the capability, we have the skills, we have the knowledge. Our will has to be to do that. And I just don't think the American black today has the will to do it. We're still trying to chase after being accepted in a community of folks that it was never designed to be so. And then there's just one other thing I want to address as it relates to this idea of all of these concepts that come out. I do consider myself to be a Christian. I don't consider this to be my home. I look at it as I'm a foreigner in a foreign land, and that's my frame of reference. And so this idea, all of these things as it deals with race, racism, oppression, and then liberation, they're concepts that you have to first conceive in your mind, embrace it, and then you can operationalize it. These things that are out here, I don't believe that we serve a God that creates a lot of these things that have a disproportionate impact on our people. But I do know that what God allows, mankind sometimes takes advantage and misuse it in such a way that it disproportionately impacts our people. So we have to put the accountability where it lies. I don't care whether it's a rock. I don't care if it's food. It can be used in a good way, and it can be used in a bad way. We have to be able to change our mindset that we take whatever we are dealt and whatever we accrue and use it for the betterment of our people and move away from this mindset that is a foreign concept for the African, this mindset, I, me, and my. It is we and us. And when we get to that, then we'll start to stand on our own without needing a crutch, without needing to denigrate another people. The concept of worrying about what a Donald Trump-like spirit is doing is completely irrelevant. When we truly are liberated mentally, we will find the emotional and the spiritual construct to erect our nation wherever we are. Thank you.
All right. I heard that. Thank you, sister. All right, I'm going down to 7974. It's the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rowan and Stan Macklin. Are you ready to talk? Because we're ready to listen.
Hi.
7974. Hey.
Hey, yeah. So I agree with the previous callers, again, about the same concept that I think we do have, you know, what we need, and that doesn't necessarily translate to if it can be done. I think the way in which you're kind of talking about this is so, it seems like there's some simplistic parts that are really complex in this nation. And even the clip that you played, he said, first every black person, then he said, well, not every black person, every black person, you know, that wants nationhood. But I think that to say that there have not been places where black people throughout the years, if we think about all of the reasons that these places where nationhood and Tulsa and other places has happened, even on a smaller level, and how white supremacy, right, has tore it down. And so I don't think that this idea of nationhood is new. I think this idea of liberation and black freedom has had pockets, if you will, that has really flourished throughout the country in different ways. But I also think that there's a system designed for us not to be successful, and that system has worked over and over again. It's often been a system that's met with violence, right? And so that violence, whether it's burning down, killing, lynching, or now it's a little bit more complex in terms of, you know, cyber terrorism. We've had one of the most significant cyber terrorist attacks on our nation, and people in our government are silent, in particular our president. President, he's not my president. But anyway, I think to say this to say is I think that, you know, I think we need to look at the fact that we do have everything we need. But at the same time, I don't know that nationhood is what that translates to everyone. And what does that mean? Does it mean that we go to a different place? Does that mean we collectivize what we have now, right? But I think that, you know, in the principle of Kwanzaa in particular, in talking about how do we support our own, how do we build our own, how do we get our own money, it's some basics. And I think that while the idea of nationhood is wonderful, we have some real basics that we need to think about, that in terms of how we're raising our children, how we, you know, some of us don't have bank accounts, we don't have fundamental things. And I think, you know, the layers is that we have to go back and think about how we basically cover some of the basic necessities. You can't go to thriving without covering the fact that we have so many of our people who are in survival mode, and particularly in a pandemic. And I think that a lot of that needs to be addressed as well. So I think it can be done, but I think, you know, are we talking about a state of mind nationhood, or are we talking about a physical aspect? Are we talking about a combination of both? And I think until you have someone who has laid that out completely, then I think there's always going to be questions around what does that mean and how do we get there?
All right. Let me ask you a question before you go. Brother mentioned the Stockholm Syndrome. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I believe that we have Stockholm Syndrome. The interesting thing about Stockholm Syndrome is that as long as your captor, right, your captor is taking care of you, it's kind of like Stockholm Syndrome and Willie Lynch all in the same, because you are shaping the person to be able to fit your needs. And because you convince that person that no one else cares about them, you're the only person that cares about them, that sense of belonging now, that even though that initial shock has worn off, right, the initial shock, you are still loyal to that person, even though deep inside you know that the situation that you're in is not right. And I think that's the same thing that is for Black Americans, right? We are fatigued racially. That's what racial battle fatigue is. We are fatigued racially. But I think that Stockholm syndrome that we don't know how to get out, or we have acquiesced to our surroundings. And so you make the best you can so that you, you know, again, minimize the threats of your captor, and you minimize the threats probably of violence, and you acquiesce. So, yeah, I do believe that the Black people oftentimes still operate, because you don't have to be white to perpetuate white supremacy. It's an ideology. It's a thought process. It's a mindset. And so you don't have to be Black to perpetuate. I mean, you don't have to be white to perpetuate that. And I think even the mental perpetuation of white supremacy is a part of Stockholm syndrome.
Right. Thank you, Carla. I'm sliding down to 8128. If you're ready, I'm ready. It's Marvin Rowan, Stan Macklin. It's the Empowerment Network. Carla, are you available?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
All right.
No.
0946, are you available for conversations? Marvin Rohn, Stan Macklin.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm so sorry, Sam, that the time got away from me, so I'm joining in on the conversation late. But I think we're talking about Stockholm syndrome, or just kind of our conditioning.
Well,
we're
talking about returning to our rightful place and the reasons why we're in the position that we're in. And so we're looking at whether we're able to manage our own nation. Are we in position? Do we have the skills and the tools and the aptitude necessary to lead from the front? Do we have the ability to say, can we establish a place where we can run it and we can operate it right now? Are we ready? What you got? What's your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think there is some common ground, for lack of words, when it comes to Black and white people, and that is that we all have this anti-Black conditioning. Mm. And with us both having that, we are complicit directly and indirectly with keeping white supremacy alive. White people could disappear off the planet today and the conditioning would go on right now, because our reaction to, I feel like sometimes our reaction to white people has so much more to do now with the conditioning that we already receive in our community about anti-Blackness. And so I think that I don't know how we get from under that spell. I really don't have the answer for that. I think we do a great job of articulating the problem, but then when it comes to the solution, there's not as much maybe energy or creativity or just the ability to get out from underneath that mindset and see that we are capable. So I believe that we can do it once we figure out, because we have two things going on here at the same time, and I'll end with this, is that we are trying to love ourselves and complaining about other people don't love us all at the same time.
Mm.
And so until we figure out how to love ourselves, and in the midst of trauma and fatigue and all of that, you know, finding a way to deal with those components and still be alive and not so tired. And I think that we're just in that constant reactive mode, which exhausts us.
Right.
And when you're exhausted, you're not as creative. You're not as you're not as energetic. You're not as focused under constant exhaustion. So, yeah, I think that the answer is with us. And I think that shows like this are the beginning of unlocking and creating those tools by which we can do what we need to do for ourselves in a traumatic situation. So I'll end with that.
I like that. Thank you, sister.
I like that.
Let's figure it out together. Brother George talked about unity as one of the Kwanzaa principles. Why not start there? Why not think? And Brother Booker talked about being the one on our show. Go back next last week. We talked about that in our community conversations. It's about being the one for each other now. How can we support each other? I'm going down to 1683. 1683 is Marvin Roan and Stan Macklin. What you got for me?
Yes, sir, fella. I'm back just in the car this time. Look, I'm going to
say. Oh, I got you.
Okay. The answer, let's call Nation Building what it is. It's a revolution. So are we ready for a revolution is the question. And the answer to are we ready for a revolution, I say no, because slaves will never revolt. Slaves don't want a revolution. Slaves want to be accepted and treated nicely, and we can put up with the bullshit. But we're not ready for a revolution, and nation building is a revolution, brother, because there's no way the white man's going to stand by and let black folk build a nation independent of white folk. He will not have his slaves building a nation independent of him. So until we're ready to truly revolt and have a revolution, just stop talking about nation building.
I heard that. All right. Thank you, brother. I'm going to come back to you in a minute. I'm going to try to wrap this thing up. Wrap it around to you. The brother said he turned it into revolution. Are we ready for revolution? I think those are strong words, and many of us are scared of that because we know what happens when we start talking about doing some real fighting. All right, I'm going over to Brother George. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, what you got?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Well, I want to say two things. First of all, I would argue that the Nation of Islam has been a nation within a nation in this country since back in the 1930s. It has been the perfect example for black people coming together, being disciplined, being organized, being defending ourselves. And as a matter of fact, when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and when Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan went abroad, they were accepted as heads of state. I think it's the hatred that we have of ourselves as black people that we don't necessarily want to recognize like the achievements of some groups. And of late, you know, I think that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has made some enemies of some of the young aspiring brothers. And, you know, so to talk about following that lead, they may not want to. But even within the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's program, it stated that we wanted some land or territories of our own so that we could build our own nation with the assistance of the U.S. government as a form of reparation.
Mm-hmm.
And after 20 to 25 years, that we would be able to go for ourselves. Now, the second thing that I wanted to say was empire building is more than just a nation. And empires were not built without having wars between smaller groups to defeat a smaller group and then encompass them into your larger group. That's how empires are built. So that's not just that would mean that it's a lot of us that's trying to do the same thing at the same time in this country. And so there are many small groups that are very capable of doing what it is that they're doing. But in order to have the huge impact that I think we're really talking about, which is going back to what we once were, I'm sure that that's going to take a lot more time than, you know, within our lifetime. But
right.
I will say this. We are very equipped with the thinkers, with the planners, with the military people, with the doctors, the lawyers, the financial analysts in the world, we're equipped with every single bit of that. There's nothing that we don't have. Now, I will say this also. Our people are very afraid of fighting. We're very afraid of white people, that they can just dominate us when they get ready. And as long as they can keep that thought in our minds that they can dominate us when they get ready, they never have to do it. And sometimes in order to become a nation, you have to say, okay, now who else walks around in this country and says the white man is the devil and get away with it? And really, that's the only real thing that most black folks say. That's why they're not in the nation, because they call the white man the devil. If you take that away, take away, you know, the concept that the white man is the devil, and then look at all the other principles and things that the nation has, most of our people don't even know, because they never decided to research to find out what is it that they actually focus on. Because we really don't focus on, you know, the white man being the devil. Like, that's the principal thing. No, you can't get much accomplished if that's all you're thinking about.
True.
So, you know, I just beg to differ when you say just because it's not a huge nation, it's a nation and it's a functioning nation and it's respected in the world. So that's my comment, brother.
Thank you, brother. I would agree. I think also there's a conflict in religion, because most African American are Christian based, and of course the Nation of Islam focuses on the practice of Islam, and I think that creates a natural conflict for many of us when it comes to that. But I will say, we have Georgia Wright. I think we do have a lot of things, but the thing that we don't have, because we have doctors and lawyers and scientists, but we don't have organization and we don't have good leadership. All right, 7244 just jumped in. 7244 is Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. If you're willing to talk, I'm willing to listen. Are you there?
Yeah, this is Equal Me. What's going on, fam?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Peace and power, family. How you doing, brother?
Peace and power and blessings to you. I'm doing well. What you got for me today?
Well, man, I was just going back to the conversation in which you guys were having. It's a one that has basically been on the forefront of my mind, because it's I can remember Dr. John Henry Clark, and not many of my elders in my life, and I didn't actually know, you know, the great ancestor, Dr. John Henry Clark, personally, but I'm very familiar with a lot of his works. And in one of his quotes, he said that Abrahamic religions, all Abrahamic religions that we see, were created for political purposes. So that means, like, the very understanding of how you are to now govern yourself, because politics is synonymous to your religion, right? Why is that? Why is that, Equality? Because it governs, it allows, it tells you what to do, right? That's what politics is all about. It's about governance, right? That's the main word, is governance, right? And that's what we basically have, and it's a conversation that myself and a brother, I remember coming up in the church, and the thing is that when you believe in Jesus, you're basically saying that you're believing in him, the sinner's prayer and all that stuff. You're basically saying that, hey, man, I'm a worthless sinner. I know what I ain't, and I'm not saying that we need to dress ourselves up as being perfect, but I remember coming up in the church, and it's like, well, Jesus died for you to be able to do the wrong thing. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So now you don't have to worry about doing bad, because Jesus died for you. He came to the world and he basically bled for you to be able to have the privilege to do wrong. And that is a thing that's definitely wayward from when I learned about African culture, African spirituality. That taught me more about the ongoing concept of doing right. The ongoing concept of practicing the right thing. When we practice doing the right thing in our own personal life, rather than trying to escape from the right thing, when we practice on doing that, guess what? When we introduce ourselves in the family life, we will practice doing the right things. When we are practicing doing the right things in our family life, guess what happens when we come to our communal life? When we're in the community, we will be doing the same thing. Therefore, in our world, our worldview, this is why we are now all over the place. And I feel like religion, which religion comes from the Greek term religio, okay? And that means basically to bind to. So you can have a person that loves the saints. You can have a person that loves hip-hop, and they are religious. They basically worship this thing. You understand? So we want to return to the religious concepts that were meant for us to thrive. And forgive me, and I'm not stepping on nobody, but in Abrahamic religions, be it Judaism, Islam, or Christianity, we pray to all of those creators, but we are still, as Africans, as black folk, we are still in the same situations as we were before we start praying. So I think that we should be able to come to the table. I mean, Christians, Muslims, all of us, if we're going to be honest, we have to say, hey, regardless of how much we prayed, regardless of how much we've gone over and spent money with the church, our communities are still failing. There are black boys, the black rappers. The black rappers are now claiming, and we're proudly, flamboyantly promoting, I killed this brother. You don't see nobody else doing that, so what does that say about our prayers? We need to question our prayers and say, well, hey, is it who we're praying to? Is it how we're praying? Because we've been praying for a long time, but guess what? Nine of us got killed in the church while in the process of praying. Why is it that the white man, he's now blaspheming because he's creating a vain image that goes wayward from what the scripture says. The scripture says that he had head of wool and skin of burnt brass. But what we see is a pale skin, long straight hair. So that in itself is political. That right there is a signification of the slave mentality that is still upon us. And that, like I tell my mama, when we going to praise that Jesus, we might say Jesus ain't got no color, but the very church in which we're praying to Jesus in has a picture of a white Jesus. You understand? That's 100%. Mm-hmm. So that right there are the very fundamentals. Before we talk about economics, before we talking about what we can do as it relates to our education, these are some of the things I feel like we need to be ridding ourselves of in order to make. Because look, how many of our people are broke as hell today? But we're going to be celebrating doing what Santa Claus wants us to do. It made me feel bad to see the sister. My wife just showed me a picture of a sister that was taking her children over to see this white Santa Claus. And the white Santa Claus, he basically told the black children they need to practice social distancing rules. You understand? With the white children, they were jolly and probably breaking all of the socially distanced rules, right? But this shouldn't be a surprise to us. I'm surprised that we are surprised. So we're going to have to step our game up as a people, and we're going to have to start engaging in a much more organic, a much more stable conversation. Therefore, we can have that type of or that level of politics that is going to actually take us forward.
All right. Thank you, brother. And this is why this is a safe space for us to share our views. I appreciate that. All right, we got about a minute left. I'm going to go back to my brother, Stan. Stan, are you there?
Thank you, man. I apologize. We was going through the mountains and got lost in there with the beans and everything.
We got about a minute left.
That sound like my nephew,
some clothes.
General Parker. Was that General Parker? Was that General
I'm not
Parker?
Sure. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Let me see if I can bring it back in real quick. Brother, are you there?
Yes, sir, brother. Yes, sir.
All right. Stan is asking if he knows you. We got about 30 seconds left, so we're going to have to make it real tight because we got to get out here. But I like your statements, brother. We're going to have to wrap this up and get back to it next week.
Yes.
We're going to thank y'all all for
Absolutely.
Calling and listening. Stan, you got any closing statements before we wrap this one up? Come back next week. Share this with your family and friends, right? We got a good dialogue going on. But guess what? We got to be responsible now. Practice doing the right thing in your community, in your family, in your household. What you got, Stan?
if you want to see change, draw a circle and get in and say, Lord, start with me.
I heard that. The brother said we're scared of revolution. Maybe the revolution should be within your own mind and your own self first. Peace and blessings. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.